Hi, this is Barbara, and welcome to Planational. I'm going to be your host. I'm a CFP, so a Certified Financial Planner, and I have my guest here, Amanda, with us. Hi, Amanda.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Thank you for joining us. So as you know, we like to ask lots of personal questions about your finances. So could you start off telling us a little bit about what you do and how much you make?
So currently, I'm working at a smaller investment advisor hedge fund. And I'm working as a junior CLO, making roughly around $150,000 a year.
Okay, great. Your take-home monthly is how much about?
So I take home approximately $6,000 a month.
Right? Okay, and then how much is your rent?
$1,400.
Okay, so that gives you plenty of wiggle room.
Yes.
Okay, good. So where would you say you spend most of your money at this point?
I would say it's a mix between my rent, and then maybe dining out.
So rent is definitely a big one that we hear, especially living in the city. It can be the largest expense.
Yeah. And I live in Brooklyn, so I have a car, so I have a car expense, and I also have car insurance. My rent includes utilities, so all I have is really my phone bill outside of that.
Oh, that's not bad. But car in Brooklyn, hard, huh?
Yeah, it gives me the freedom because I travel on the weekends, but it doesn't have, I don't have a parking garage. I park in the street.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's another expense. So you would say most of your money is going to rent and then for fun stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe after that, so dining out would be fun.
Yeah, dining out or travel as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So do you have any major stresses when it comes to your money?
Currently, no. Like, where I'm living within my means. So I planned out, because prior to this job, I was working in the banking industry, and I was making probably double the amount. So more expenses. I owned an apartment. My mortgage was higher. I had more responsibility in that sense. When I took a lower paying job, because I wanted to switch my career a bit, I decided to live within my means and find an apartment where my rent,
you can cover everything.
Exactly, yeah.
How has the transition been going? Because sometimes it's easy when you're moving up the chain in terms of income.
Yeah.
You know, where you're going from, 100 to 150 or somewhere like that, it can be really easy. And sometimes it's harder to take the steps back. I know it was for me when I bought a business.
It's super difficult. So, I'm living, I was always living within 10 to 15 minutes from work. Living on the island of Manhattan now, I live in Brooklyn, so I have about a 45-minute commute to work, and that's how it's cheaper. The further out you go,
oh, definitely.
Yeah. Additionally, I have other, other responsibilities, but it's not like the way it was prior. So, it's been tough, but it's humbling, and I'm enjoying. And the upside is much more in my current job. So it's a lower paying job, but I think I can grow and learn more in the long run, whereby when I was working in banking, I felt like I had made a certain amount. And
that was maybe the top.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was nowhere else to really
there was nowhere else to grow. There was no more learning. And I don't think within what I, in terms of the base salary was really just going to probably diminish
going. Well, it's important to be learning. I don't know about you, but I like to be able to go to work and actually learn something, which is why I like what I do. But it is hard to take. That was my biggest struggle when I bought the business, was because I left banking, similar to what you did. So I took a huge hit, and I remember being like, the first few months, I was like, oh, God, this is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, like I will cook dinner at home a lot more, and I'll make.
It's funny because you did it in the beginning of your career, right?
Yes.
In the beginning when you're starting out, you're like, okay, this is all I have, so how am I going to make it last?
Yeah.
And then you move your way up and you don't have to think about those things as much as you did in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then when you make a career change, you're like back where you were.
Exactly.
And then not all your peers do that step back.
Yes. So like right now, I'm not able to contribute to my 401k.
Okay.
Well, I don't even have a 401k. I have an IRA that I built throughout my, 15 years in my career, and I have a large savings. I feel good right now.
So okay. How old are you? So you're in your late 30s, right?
Yes, 38.
Okay. Yeah.
And so right now, the way I'm trying to structure myself is to live within the means of what I make today.
Okay.
And I have a large savings and a IRA. I'm not able to contribute to any of that right now, like maybe just a tiny bit, but if I'm not touching or dipping into it, I'm happy. Because if this small investment advisor takes off, I can, potentially become a partner or have some skin in the game and grow with it.
So it's more about the opportunity you have at work rather than continuing to save for retirement. Because you're right, if you did a really good job from 20, you started working at 22?
Yeah.
Yeah, so from 22 till now, that's a long time to be actively saving and contributing towards your retirement. So yeah, you can people always say, can you take a break? And you absolutely can take a break.
Yeah.
But you're doing it the smart way and taking a break to take another opportunity and take your career in a different direction.
Yeah.
So yeah, saving for retirement is probably not critical now, but determining what your next career path is going to be.
As long as I feel good as long as right now, even if it's the next year or two, I'm not touching it, dipping into that savings, and I'm able to kind of see where this opportunity goes, what direction, and have feelers out if in a year's time it's not growing, it's not going where I want it to go.
You can make another change.
Yeah.
But as you said, if you've done a good job saving, and so the rule of 72.
What's the rule of 72?
Oh, okay. That's where if your money grows by 7.2% compounding, your money doubles every 10 years. Have you heard of that?
No.
Oh, so it's a good trick to do math fast in your head, but you know what you have saved.
Yeah.
So you know how many years till retirement, like mid-60s probably.
Yeah.
So you can take what you have now and assume, depending on how it's invested, but you worked in finance, you know how to do that. If it makes 7.2%, then every 10 years the money will double. And so you can get a rough idea now what it'll be in the future.
Yes. When
you retire. And so that can give you a little bit of peace of mind knowing that it's
really actually not too bad.
You're doing the math right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's not like, it's not terrible. But I hope.
And that's like if you didn't just add anything.
Yeah.
Like that's if whatever it is right now.
I hope in 2 years' time or maybe a little less that I can start contributing again. Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't feel bad about taking the break. Because if you've already done the savings and you know what the number is going to be and it's decent, then just supporting yourself is key until you figure out your career path. And it's great to have upside. Becoming a partner would be wonderful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that the team, I'm officially the first employee.
So
a small team.
Okay.
We have an office here in New York City. There's four partners here, and we have an office in Mumbai.
Okay.
We're a quantitative systematic hedge fund, so... Okay. The head guy here is from Mumbai, and he hired a team there that develops and does all the coding and,
just all the fancy footwork.
All the fancy footwork. So I'm the first, official employee in New York. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. You actually end up doing a lot more than you think.
Well, yeah, running a small business. Yeah, you have to wear many hats when you're, a firm is getting established.
Yeah, but it's like, to me, I did the same job for 15 years. And, in the first, first 7 years, you learn, but then you become autopilot. And I was living...
You're very comfortable.
Yeah, very comfortable living in autopilot in the job. And the opportunities were shrinking, and I was making less money. And I was like, I'm not learning, I'm not growing. I want to do something different. And that's why I stepped out and decided to... I took a break, and then I came back in. I wanted to work with... He's actually an old client. I worked with for many years and help him out. And I'm learning how to structure a hedge fund, how it runs and how to run a business that way. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity, it sounds like, from a professional standpoint, but also personally, since it doesn't seem like you need to save right now for retirement.
Yeah.
And that's usually most people's big concern. And you don't have any debt that you've mentioned. So that's huge.
My student loans were paid off a long time ago, but the only debt I had was my mortgage.
Okay.
But I just sold my apartment.
Oh, so. Congrats.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So decided to give yourself more flexibility.
Yeah.
Because when you have a mortgage, then it kind of controls what type of income you need to make, right, so that you can support that.
Yeah, there was a lot of reasons why selling my apartment, but the number one reason for me was I felt that the market, and, did some research, was going to go down. And where my apartment, the pricing of my apartment, with the rates going up right now. So I put it on the market in October, and I got a bid in one day.
That's incredible. That's really fast. Yeah, I know. It's not supposed to be that fast.
I know. It actually forced me. Like, I thought it was going to be a couple weeks, and I was like, maybe I'll take it off. But no, it forced me to move forward in that decision. So.
Oh, that's good. And then you won't, did you have a gain in it?
Yes.
Okay.
But not.
But you won't have to pay because it's your primary residence?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. And it's not, it's not over $250,000. So if it's over $250,000 gain, I think you don't.
Yeah. So for as a single person, as you owned it individually.
Yes.
Yeah. So if anything, you get an exclusion for $250,000 of gain.
Yeah.
So you won't pay anything.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yeah. And I didn't make that much in this apartment, but I owned a place earlier in my early 30s, and
okay.
I ended up at a situation. It was a very lucky situation. It was an anomaly in real estate where my neighbor, she wanted my apartment really badly.
Oh, to combine them?
Yeah.
And oh, wow.
And I owned it for 2 years, but it was when the market in New York was the hottest in the last 10 years, and the market only went up. So we priced where the market was, and it went up a bunch, and then she was like, I'm willing to pay you even more.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So she like desperately wanted to go buy an apartment.
Yeah. So it helped me with my savings, and you know, in addition to working and saving, but that bump really was nice. So
yeah, like, that's great.
Yeah. So I didn't do as well.
Was she a fun neighbor too? Yeah, besides helping you get to retirement faster?
Yeah, she was like this really successful lawyer, and she was it's a funny story. She was redoing her apartment, and she wanted to marry her contractor who had children, so
oh my gosh, so she had a combined apartment so that she could marry the contractor. So she was going to pay you whatever.
Yes.
She could name your price. Yep. You're like, I'll just retire now. This is how much my apartment's going to go for.
But she kept it in line with the mortgage, but she was like, okay. I'm willing to pay this much more. Anyway, so long story short, that was an anomaly. It was a very unique, random situation. But it set me up to where I had the ability to invest in the markets that obviously has gone up in the last few years. Mm-hmm. So I've done well with my savings, and I feel very proud of that.
It's a huge accomplishment to be able to say you bought it. One of our last guests bought her first apartment. So it's a big accomplishment to say you bought. So you bought two apartments.
Yeah.
You're just selling.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I feel good now, like going forward, I don't think I want to own any more real estate in Manhattan, but I feel like I had successes. This place I'm selling, making a little bit of profit, but not like.
Oh, it's always good to walk away with something. Yeah. So then that, like, the last one could cover. You could just divide on that and say you had two successful opportunities.
Yeah. So I tell this to anybody: if you have a down payment and you live in New York City, it's better to buy than to rent.
Mm-hmm.
But rents have started to come down a little bit, so you have to kind of weigh it out.
Well, the down payment is something I think that people don't realize, that you not only need the down payment, but you need the closing costs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
And that can sometimes be a little prohibitive for people.
Yes, yeah.
But absolutely, if you can do it, owning is
better than renting. Yeah.
Owning is definitely better.
But I mean, I think in the last year, and I haven't gauged it all that much, rents have come down a lot, so I don't know.
Well, yeah, and it always depends on people's situation. So for you, obviously you did, it was a great investment for you for both apartments, but sometimes it depends on the person. Do they have student loans, other obligations? So now you kind of want to maybe rent to have more freedom.
Yeah.
Right? Because then you can say, I can pick up and leave. Maybe the job isn't working out. I don't want to be here. But when you have that mortgage, it's a lot more responsibility.
Yes. It's like, so right now, when you ask me my biggest responsibility, it's rent, and then okay.
So it's a nice change for you. Yeah. That's why you're like, oh, it's just rent. My only big bill. It's rent.
And my car, but I've actually got a very like economical car. It's not too expensive. It's like Ford Escape, so it's about $325 a month.
Okay.
And it's got no bells and whistles. It's just a straight standard car.
They can get you out of the city if you want.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah.
So that's great. So most of your money goes to rent and then fun stuff.
Yeah. So I am living in a lower rent apartment.
Okay.
But a few years ago, I could travel more frequently. I could spend more money on handbag if I wanted. It's not like that anymore. I have to be more.
So now you prioritize it.
Yes. And I cook more at home and bring more food to work for lunch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that adds up. People don't realize that. But getting the coffees out and going out for lunch.
Yeah.
That adds up really quickly. But you're still able to make travel? Travel is one of your other goals?
Yeah, I love traveling. I love, I've always made it a point, especially in like my adult life, like really try to do one big trip a year, but then, you know, see, I like to see the world, I like to see different cultures, I like to experience that, yeah.
And that's, you budget that in?
Yes, I budget that in.
So do you save for that on, or you just take it out of your budget when it happens?
No, I have like a buffer in my
savings account.
Yeah. Okay. So I have money that's invested in my IRA, okay. And then I have a savings account, which I keep a buffer, and when I want to travel. And I try to add to that savings account. Even now, with my current job, I will pay for it out of that.
Got it. Okay. So that's great. So it seems like you got it all together for your finances.
Yeah.
Does it feel like that?
Yeah. Okay. I feel, even with taking less money, yes, I have it all under account, but I do think like lifestyle has changed a bit.
Okay. So it's still an adjustment to get used to the commute and like having to watch, because you're just watching what you're spending more than you
used to. Watching what I'm spending, and I'm not like, you know, I lived in an apartment with a beautiful, like amazing steam shower, and now like I'm in like a Brooklyn, it's a, like one of these row houses that are, you know, sometimes the shower drain doesn't go down. Like, I don't know. It's just, you have to adjust
your lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah.
To what you have now. But you think that professionally it was the right move.
Yes. Yeah, I do. And it, for many reasons. And it could just be that I was ready for a change, ready to learn something different.
Okay.
And, you know, if it doesn't work out, I could always go back to banking.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't think they're going anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, not yet.
Yeah.
They're still there.
Yeah.
That's very true. So would you say that money stresses you out at all, or?
I don't think so. I don't ever feel under stress and pressure to meet what my current obligations are, but money has always been something that is something I have focused on.
Okay.
So it is, I'm not frivolous, and I'm not a big, you know, let's say a spender. Like, I would never spend more than I make. Like,
okay.
It's always consciously on my mind. Like,
where you are.
Checks and balances in my head. Like, you know, and I think I'm just built that way. Like, that's, you know, I don't know. I think my mother is very similar that way. So taught me, and that's how I.
So it's just ingrained in you. So yeah. Like, okay, this is what I have coming in. I can't go over this amount because I want to stay within my means.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I, you know, I've had friends and family members that are very different that way. They just don't have that. It's not built within them. It's built within me to, like, keep
to
manage it that way.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not built. Some people
just can't.
They just can't do it. Or they have, where they can't, not that you can't do it, because you can kind of do it, I think, do anything you set your mind to, but it's not as natural to stay within a budget. It's, like, a much harder process.
Yeah.
So that's great, because I feel like some people have money worries. Like, there's things about it that stress them out.
I mean, isn't it the number one reason why, you know, people get divorced these days?
They say that one of the number one arguments between couples is money stress, you know, or arguments relating to some sort of financial concern. Because, like, as you said, it's ingrained in you to keep a budget, but then you could marry someone that it's not ingrained in, and they don't think that it's that big of a deal to overspend, and so simple arguments like that can...
Like, for me, I've never had a time in my life where I ran, except maybe a little bit right out of college, where I ran debt.
Okay.
Like, in terms of credit card debt. Like, I never kept a balance in my credit card. I always paid it off every month. And I think it's just, like I said, it's like my mother, or like, even my father's that way. It's just, I've always been very conscious of that.
That's so funny. So my sister and I are so different when it comes to finances. We're raised in the same household. So yes, like, some people pick it up from their parents, and some people could pick it up from their parents and don't, and then some people, it isn't an option to pick it up from their parents, but it tends. But yeah, you bring up an interesting point. It is an issue in relationships.
My brother, exact opposite. So yeah, I got influenced by my parents. He did not, clearly.
He didn't get the genes.
No, I didn't get those genes. So it's like, yeah, for me, I've always been, like I said, lived within my means, focused on saving, always had a mental ability to, like, do checks and balances in my head, where I don't think a lot of people have, not a lot, I think some people don't have that.
Yeah, you're definitely financially minded, right? So you work in finance, so you're around it all the time, you enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely gives you added benefit, right?
Yeah.
To have that skill set and then be able to say, okay, like, where do I want to be in my financial future?
Yeah, and I think some people, if they were to, I do think that some people, if they were going to take a change in their career and a downtick in their what they're making, they would, if they had savings, they would maybe live off the savings while they're doing that to grow. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel comfortable. Like, I feel most comfortable not
protecting that.
Protecting that.
I think that unless you were going to be doing a conscious, like, I'm taking 1 year and I've, you know, allocated X.
Yes.
And it's a conscious decision, I think you're right. I think the fact that you, it seems like you have probably enough, what you've already saved with the two apartment sales and what you saved for 15 years, that you could probably, if you did nothing else from this point on, it was just you needed to take care of, you could probably retire comfortably.
And you're like, in with your, what is it, the 7.2 rule?
Yeah, with the rule, if you did the math on your, in your head.
If that money compounded in the market, continue to go up and not have these crazy, like...
Oh, the whipsaws?
Yeah. then I think that I can eventually retire off that, but I don't want to live off that now.
No, I think that's smart. I think it's living within your means, and then obviously as you grow, it doesn't hurt to add more to it down the road, because I think everyone's goal is to be able to say at any point, I can retire today and not have to be like, oh, I have to retire at 67 or 69, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's so far away away.
Yeah.
So to be able to have that financial freedom is... I think what most people are striving for. But it sounds like you have it now, right? Because you can live within your means. So you're getting rid of the apartments. So you don't have any obligation.
Yeah. It's, but, you know, eventually I'm sure I'll have some more obligations. But, it's funny to say, let's, like, rent. That's it right now. You know, or my car. But then I think, actually, like, you miss a payment on your car. It's a Ford. It's, like, really, really...
They're really strict.
Very strict. Like,
yeah, they want you to pay them.
Yeah, and they will not take it on a credit card. You have to... It gets swept out of my...
Oh, a direct deposit out of your bank account?
Yeah, which is fine. But, like, it will mark your credit, so I'm very conscious of that.
That's good. Yeah, I know you don't want the Ford to ding your credit when you've done, like, such a good job with everything else. And then, like, what about your new company, do they have a 401k or do they have anything down the road you can participate in? Because 401ks are typically for bigger companies.
Yeah, so we're talking about
getting one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all, like, in the works. So, all right, so we are currently $600 million this year. We have a 3-year track record.
Okay.
It's been a really successful 3 years for the fund. But at this point, if we get to $1 billion this year, some of the larger investors, larger pension funds and endowments will write.
They'll invest more money because then it's a little bit more secure of an investment. Okay.
It's a secure investment, and these investors do not want to be the largest investor in the pool.
Right.
So it's like a chicken or egg game, and like we're at this very big breaking point. Hence, they hired me.
We're trying to grow it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll hire somebody else later on in the year. And so it's really pushing to get above that
marker.
Billing. Yeah.
And then when that happens, you'll probably have more benefits as an employee.
Yes.
Right, because you're the only one right now, so they don't have a lot of offering.
What they do offer is amazing, is free medical insurance.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, huge.
I would love free medical.
No, it's free and it's awesome. It's actually really good medical insurance, and I don't know, I can't complain.
So, I don't know, with dating, I always want to know if someone has health insurance. It's so expensive. I don't want to have to keep paying for it.
I know.
So do you have student loans? No? Great. Do you have medical insurance? Wait, the date's over? What happened? That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's huge. Because that can run like $1,000 a month.
Yeah. So that's like, my base salary is less. Oh, and I forgot to say, if we get to the $1 billion
mark the company,
I will get paid more. I will get a bonus at the end of the year.
Oh,
so
that's great.
Can bring me from 150 to 200. But
that's a big bonus.
Yeah, it would be wonderful, but I don't want to
count on it.
Yeah.
Right, because it's not totally in your control.
Yeah.
Oh, but that would be great.
Yeah. So that was that was put into my contract.
That's fantastic.
So not
saving it doesn't matter at all, because if you believe in the firm and it sounds like you do, and that you can get to this marker, then that would be more than enough to have saved. You could use part of that for savings.
Yeah.
So easily. And the health insurance is huge.
Health insurance. And if it does happen and I get that bump, I mean, I would just immediately put that in savings. That's how I
always looked at it. Yeah, because it's not in your pocket, right?
Yeah.
I always just say it's like, that's like tomorrow money.
Yeah.
Your salary is today money. That's your tomorrow money. Because you're living perfectly fine without it.
Yes. But I try to save a little bit of what I'm making today, but I think you know, when I say I spend money on dining out or travel, like, I think, you know, living in a less desirable, I wouldn't say less, it's very beautiful, Park Slope is wonderful, but I'm living in an apartment.
Well, you're not living in your apartment, probably put it that way. Yeah. You left your apartment, right?
To live in a
different environment that was not your ideal.
Yeah.
To take this opportunity.
But I also think, like, life is about balance. So, you know, spending money in New York City is a tough place. So, like, spending money and, like, dining out or going to a Broadway show, I think is really important. I don't think I want to sit on what I'm making to save. I think it's really important to, like, live life and enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. Because you never know what tomorrow's going to bring, which is why I always kind of categorize money as today money and tomorrow money.
Yes, I like that categorization. So, like, today money, I try, you know, I'm living within my means, but I'm, like, you know.
You don't want to sit at home every night, right, exactly. By yourself and be like, well, I have all this money saved. Isn't this wonderful? Yeah. You want to be able to
these zeros.
Those on my account balances. Yeah, no, that doesn't bring very much joy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a balance. Yeah, I agree. Like, you're doing a good job, but you should absolutely be traveling and spending your money and enjoying yourself. It's a balance between making sure you meet all your goals, right? So obviously you want to not work forever, but I mean, most people don't want to work forever.
Exactly.
I like what I do and I still don't want to work forever. And so, you know, making sure you hit retirement, you don't have debt, which you don't, and then, like, enjoying your hard-earned money today, which is, like, going out and traveling and, like, going to a show.
Yeah.
So I agree, there has to be a balance.
Yeah, you can't.
That's the tricky part. I feel like a lot of people don't know how to balance, like, depending on what their obligations are. Like, if they have student loans or credit cards, and then they want to retire, and they also want to buy. It's, like, hard to balance it all at times.
It's to know what's overwhelming for people. Like, I think having the option to work with somebody like yourself and have, you know, give advice and, like, you know, direction is what a lot of people need. I think, including myself sometimes. Like, when it comes to investing, like, money, I don't know. Like, I don't know where it should go. And
that's so funny. You're the last person I would expect to say that.
Yeah. I can tell you other things, but, like, when it comes to, like, personal money, it's very strange. I think that you find a lot of people, when they work in finance and they work in institutional finance, when it comes to their own personal, you know, investments, they don't know what.
Well, so interestingly enough, they don't teach it anywhere.
They do not teach it anywhere. And, like,
and if someone's telling you something, which I'm sure you've experienced, because most people have, they're typically educating you on a facet of it to sell you something. They're not educating you on it purely for the education. They're educating you to then sell you the product that they educated you on.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, and so I think that's why I'm doing the whole podcast. So I'm glad that you brought it up, because I really want to educate people and, like, show people the world of finance, of personal finance, because no one talks about their money. No one talks about how much they make, what their struggles are, and what's happening in their day-to-day.
Yeah.
They literally will talk about anything else. And nobody will discuss what they make or what the problems are with their finances.
It's a sore point for so many people. And then sometimes it's just, like, you know, it's uncomfortable to talk about. So, like you said, a lot of people don't talk about it. And
it's important because no one teaches it.
Yeah.
It should be an open, I think it should be an open dialogue and pure education. So I guess that leaves us with a great place to wrap up. So thank you for wrapping it up. It was great chatting with you.
Yes, thank
you. I'm glad this is going so well. I feel like I normally try and offer some sort of help at the end of the conversation, but I think you have it all together. Unless there's anything you want me to help, because we do a 6-month check-in. So if there's anything you want me to help you with.
For you to check in for sure in 6 months, because I, you know, when I'm going to do a reevaluation of where I am financially, and, like, with this, especially with this new role I'm in, and I would absolutely look for advice if, you know.
So we'll do a check in with you.
Yeah.
Okay, Amanda. So in 6 months, we'll check in, we'll see how the job's going, we'll see if you hit that target at work, if you got that money, the apartment should have closed by then.
Yes.
So we'll kind of do a refresher and see how you're doing and making sure everything's still good.
Yep. That'd be great.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you, Barbara.
And if you're looking for some more education on personal finance, you can check out our online class, Financial Rockstar, at www.planential.com, and learn how to make your money work for you. Thank you.